This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
0-2-2, that foul line has been a dilemma. They made the two big ones the other night.
National championship is in the balance. 13 seconds left. Florida leads it by two.
Uzan got to go.
Uzan, give it up. Cryer, 6 seconds, 5 seconds, Sharp.
He walked, he can't touch it.
He can't, 1 second, and it's over. Florida is back on top of the college basketball world championship madness.
Iron Eagle last night with Bill Raftery, Grant Hill, the CBS call, a horrendous ending to what was a pretty good championship game and a very good overall Final Four. Florida, national champions in college basketball. Good morning. A somewhat mixed morning for me because of some news we'll give you at 12 noon. So stay tuned or at least come back for that at 12 noon. Before we get to the game, this from Danny Z in Rockville. Danny writes, Kevin, you made a distinction between greatest player and greatest legend. Ovi, the greatest player, and someone else, the greatest legend in D.C. history. I think Ovi is both. Ben said yesterday on your show, he's referring to Ben Standig, if someone had told you 20 years ago that a Russian teenager that plays hockey would be this city's greatest sports athlete of all time, you would have checked that person into a padded room. Yet here we are. Legendary career. Thank you for that, Danny. Danny, the definition of legend, I wanted to look it up, and there are basically two definitions. The definition that we would not use would be a traditional story sometimes popularly regarded as historical but unauthenticated. You know, the legend of what happened. You know, it typically is unauthenticated and kind of grows into something that maybe doesn't even resemble what actually happened. The other definition, an extremely famous or notorious person, especially in a particular field. Personally, I think when we're talking about the greatest DC sports legend in terms of team sport athletes in the last 50 or so years, I think it's Riggo. I think John Riggins is more famous for what he did in his particular field in this city. I think his 4th-and-1 touchdown run in Super Bowl 17 is the most famous play and most famous moment in this city's sports history. But Ovi is a legend. There's no doubt about it. We're just talking about comparing legends. And there is no doubt that Ovechkin is the greatest player on a team in the four major sports over the last half century. And yes, the description that Ben gave yesterday on the show does make it an incredible, unexpected career, even though there was a lot of hype around him. In terms of the way he grew in popularity over the years as well, in terms of what he did for this city when it comes to this sport, remember a few years before he arrived, they were trying to save the Caps from moving because hockey was so niche compared to the other sports. He did a tremendous amount for the Capitals, for the sport of hockey in this city. His career's the best ever for a team sport athlete, and it was a legendary, and it continues to be, a legendary career. And by the way, there's more to go. So we can put that conversation on hold, not that we can't have it, but in terms of being super definitive, until his career is over. I mean, they might win another cup. He might score another, you know, five goals and hit 900 and who knows how many more. But for me, in thinking about just the most famous team sport athlete of the four majors, I personally think it's Riggo. All right, let's talk about the game last night. God, man, I wanted Houston to win. You know, I picked them to win going into Final Four weekend. I felt really good about the game, the way it was played in the first half, the way they extended the lead in the second half to 12 points. My God, are they good defensively? Are they intense defensively? It's something you've seen throughout the season and throughout the tournament, and they just wear on you to the point where most teams just put up their arms and submit, succumb. Florida did not. They did not. They were just as good at times defensively, even in the first half. I thought both teams were exceptional in the first half, and they let them play. They, meaning the referees. I hate starting really with the referees. However, the way this game ultimately was officiated was disgusting. It was a game in which they set the tone in the first half that we are going to let both of you go at it. We're going to let you grab. We're going to let you hold. We're going to let you be physical. We're going to let you put bodies on people. We are not going to blow the whistle. We are swallowing the whistle unless it's a decapitation, which there were a couple of near decapitations in the first half. Four fouls were called in the first half of the game. 26 were called in the second half of the game when you weren't even allowed to breathe on your opponent. That was horrendous officiating. Now, I don't think it favored one team or the other significantly. I do think Houston being forced to go small in the game with their big guys getting in foul trouble before anybody else on Florida did. Florida ended up with 11 team fouls and not one player with more than three. And Houston ended up with 19 fouls with Tugler fouling out, Francis ending up having four and playing in foul trouble throughout. It forced them to go small, and it was not the best lineup for Houston as they battled foul trouble throughout the second half. Ultimately, Florida shot seven more free throws in the game. You would look at the foul disparity and say it really did favor Florida. I think Florida adjusted a little bit better, but why did they have to adjust? Why did Houston have to adjust? It's the national championship game. You cannot have two completely different halves in the way the game is officiated. You will see sometimes when you have a few fouls called in the first half and neither team even sniffs the one and one, and you'll see, we got to extend this game. We got to make it a little bit longer. The game's going to end in an hour and a half, and they'll call more fouls in the second half. But four in the first half and 26 in the second? You saw it early. Houston was in the 1-1 with 14 minutes and 7 seconds left. 5:53 had gone by and 7 fouls had been called on Florida. And then Florida was in the 1-1 a minute and a half later with just over 12 to go. And then Florida eventually made it to the double bonus before the 10-minute mark. Come on. if you want to call it tightly from the beginning. Set the tone. This is how the game's going to be officiated. You should learn right now what this game's going to be about and adjust accordingly. The disparity between the officiating in the first half and the second half, given that this was a championship game with supposedly the best in the business, was foul to watch. No pun intended. Just really awful. It brought the game to a standstill. It totally changed the way Houston played. It totally took them out of their game defensively, especially when they had to go small with bigs off the floor. Florida did a nice job. They adjusted better. I give them credit for that. I actually think Florida overall ran better offense in the game when you had to get and you had to execute down the stretch. I don't think Houston did. I thought Florida's defense was outstanding. I thought Houston's was hellacious in the first half and even at times during the second half. But you can't do that to a championship game. You just can't. The second half took an hour and a half to play. It was really unfortunate that they did that to the game. And, you know, yeah, they let them go after each other. I mean, they let them brawl in the first half. And look, it benefited Houston more so than it did Florida because they're used to that. And they're good at that. But Florida's pretty good at it too. But they had the Gators completely rattled at times in the first half. And yet, the lead at halftime was just 3. In part because of a missed goaltending call. With about a minute to go in the first half, that was a massive swing in the first half score. It was a ball that was not just on the rim and in the cylinder. The ball was more in the cylinder than it was outside of it, and it was swiped away. How they missed that, I have no idea. And it would have given Houston an 8-point lead, but after it got swatted out, Florida came down and hit a 3, and ultimately that was an 8-point swing. A five-point swing, rather than being up 8, they were up 3 at the half. Really big, big swing. In fact, they also missed a tipped shot that went out of bounds on Houston's final possession. They should have retained possession of the ball with about, 2.2 on the shot clock. Instead, Florida ended up getting the ball back with a chance. But I don't think I have ever seen a disparity, a total difference in the way a game is officiated from one half to another. Certainly not in a big spot like this. Honestly, they've got to look in the mirror and say, what did we do to this game? Why on earth? Obviously, they went in at halftime and said, well, we got to get control of this game. I don't think they needed to get control of it. It wasn't, I've heard people say that this was some sort of, MMA fight in the first half. It was physical, but it was well defended by both teams. Florida got after it too. They just weren't as used to it offensively. Houston's plan was pretty obvious early on. Walter Clayton Jr., they had a goal, was not going to score in the game. I mean, every time he crossed half court, he was picked up. Every time they ran a ball screen for him, he was trapped and double teamed. He did a good job passing the ball, but he had 0 points at halftime. 0 for a guy that had gone for 30 and 34 in the 2 games prior to it. And you could argue was easily the best player in the game last night going into it. And Houston just decided, we're not going to give him his and take away everybody else's. We're going to take away his and see if everybody else can beat us. In terms of that strategy, it paid off. They had a 12-point lead, but ultimately the game was brought to a halt with whistles that were blowing every 12 seconds. There was a stretch of 19 seconds, 3 fouls called on Houston in the second half. But I enjoyed the game. Like, I thought it was exactly kind of going into it. I gave credit to Florida for being very good defensively as well. Also a very good offensive rebounding team. Houston, I just thought, grown men, advanced. Ultimately, they would wear them down. They would win the game. And, you know, they had to, you know, Florida had to keep them off the offensive glass. Houston, another 15 offensive rebounds. Now, the overall rebounding advantage was even. Florida's turnovers crushed them in the first half, but Houston's turnovers in the second half crushed them. It was an exciting game. I liked the game, except it was just so painful when the whistle blew as much as it did in the second half. Now, down the stretch, you know, I talked about the Duke game on Saturday. I gave Houston more credit for winning the game on Saturday against Duke than Duke for blowing it. And last night, I'm going to give Florida more credit for winning the game than Houston for blowing it. It doesn't mean that Houston didn't mess up because their last four possessions, they did not get a shot off. That's pretty amazing, right? In a super tight game, they did not get a shot off in their final four possessions. And Emmanuel Sharpe was a big part of it. I mean, a devastating end for him, who, by the way, no conscience at all. I mean, he's gunning them from everywhere in the first half. I'm not sure he hit the rim in the first half on some of his threes. And that's just the kind of player he is. And then he got it going a little bit in the second half. But the turnover when they were down one, when he drove it into three players, and he had multiple options for passes, that was a terrible turnover. It wasn't a great possession either. The last play of the game, all he's got to do is catch, pump fake, Clayton Jr. goes flying by, and he's got a feet set, maybe with one dribble to gather himself, open three to win the game, to win the national championship. He just got hurried. You know, Clayton Jr. did a great job closing out on that play. He came from nearly, you know, the baseline, just inside of it, as Sharp came up off what was really a half of a screen. I wanted Cryer to take the last shot. They did a good job on Cryer, but they got Sharp the ball. They were clearly playing to win the game with a three. They got Sharp the ball, and, you know, he didn't make a natural basketball play. With a defender running at him, that is a pump fake. Defender goes by, and it's one dribble to get your feet set and to gather yourself. Boom. Fire it. Win or lose, at least we're getting it up on the rim. By the way, getting it up on the rim, too, with about 4 seconds to go, would have given Houston a chance to crash the glass on a miss. And instead, he didn't think Clayton Jr. could get to him, and he went up and, you know, dropped the ball. And, you know, actually, in hindsight, the best thing would be to have picked up the ball with about 2.5 seconds to go and taken the turnover. At least then, Houston could have lined up and played some defense, maybe gotten a quick foul. But, you know, it ended very messy, very poorly. And Houston goes home 65-63 and without the cover. The under came in 1-1 on the picks yesterday. I was thinking, Denton, you know, if this game goes to overtime at 65-65, I got a chance to lose both. I wanted Houston to win, though, and I thought, kind of like Duke was the better team for three quarters of the game on Saturday night, I thought Houston was the better team for, you know, every bit of three quarters of the game last night, but they couldn't close it out. And Florida did what they've done throughout. They came from behind, and Clayton Jr. had some big-time plays. That screen, the screener, where he came back off after setting a screen, was a great half-court execution to get him that open three. That was big-time. I thought Golden did a much better job against hellacious defense in executing offensively in the half court than Kelvin Sampson's team did down the stretch. I think that's kind of obvious. The three that Clayton made to tie it up at 60, I believe it was, with, I don't know, 2:50, 3 minutes to go, was such a great play. And I didn't see Houston run enough. There was a lot of space the floor, call for a ball screen, try to make a play until the end. Anyway, tough loss for Houston. I'd love to have seen Kelvin Sampson win a national championship, but Florida deserved it. And this was a game in which both teams were exceptional defensively, and Florida's defense ended up winning the game at the end of the game. Yeah, I would put some of it on Houston, trust me. You know, certainly the sharp last two possessions. In fact, the turnover on the possession down 64-63 was really bad, because that was an obvious, you're dribbling right into three people. You know, the last play is unfortunate. It happens, but he had an opportunity to just make a natural basketball catch. He sees Clayton Jr. closing out, and all the momentum closing out. One pump fake, boom, he's got an open look to win the game. Or he would have had a drive if he had wanted to drive it. What else on my notes here? You know, the other part of the game in the second half, you got to call the tech on the player that threw the ball down and, you know, out of frustration. But calling a bench technical on Florida because the bench jumped up is so stupid in a national championship game. Don't do that. That was a big turning point in the moment for Houston. Benefited Houston. You know, last night, I didn't know this until after the game. Last night was the first time all season Houston held an opponent to under 70 points and lost. They were 33-0. That almost sounds impossible, but that's how good they were defensively. They were the number one defensive team in America per KenPom. But they were 33-0 going into the game last night, holding opponents under 70. Held Florida to 65 and lost. You know, some of the three-point shooting was horrendous. You know, both coaches got interviewed, you know, in the first half, and they both talked about nerves. Okay, the defense, though, was part of the reason some of those shots were way off. I mean, even when they weren't totally contested, so much of the movement offensively was contested on both ends that even when you got free, you felt like somebody was coming. But I'll credit that to nerves and championship game nerves. And by the way, a little bit of, you know, both teams played, you know, unbelievable games on Saturday, 48 hours earlier. Houston, a game that went to exhaustion at the end, and they were back 48 hours later to play the championship game, and so they could have been just a bit out of it. The shooting was horrendous in the first half, but I thought it was primarily defense. I mean, these two teams combined for 12 block shots, for 13 steals in the game. It just, everything was contested. It was like, in football terms, it was hard to gain a yard for either team in the game. Florida did, I thought, a bad job off the doubles of actually finding Condon in particular, and he did a poor job with the ball in the paint. There were opportunities for Florida to get some open shots in the first half, but they were rattled, completely rattled about what was coming next. Because Houston, it was a block party in the first half. Even on a turnover and a fast break, the relentless pursuit ended up, instead of a layup for Florida, block shot, and the ball was going the other way. I love that kind of relentless pressure and aggressiveness, and I love those kinds of games, even though they can get a little bit ugly at times offensively. But what they did to the game, the referees in the second half, despicable. I mean, you know, it's a sporting event. Nobody's going to die. Understood that. Everybody's still breathing today. But for a national championship game, to have referees call the game one way and then call it completely the opposite way in the next half isn't fair to either team. They set the tone in the first half. This is the way we're going to call it. We're going to let you play. Nothing turned into a brawl. The game wasn't super chippy. There were a couple of moments. There are always going to be a couple of moments in the championship game, but this wasn't a game on the verge of getting out of control where they had to get control of it. Just unfortunate that the three officials in the game had to become such a part of the story. I don't think I've ever heard of 4 fouls in one half and 26 in the second. Denton will give you his thoughts on the championship game. And if you want to weigh in, phone lines are open. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. College basketball's over. The tournament, it flies by. Not a lot of classic games, but you ended up with some high-quality teams down the stretch. And I think that made for an overall, you know, plus tournament. Very good Final Four. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. From my buddy Nick, he said it. They did it the opposite way. If anything, in a championship game, you call it closely in the first half and you swallow the whistle in the second half and let them play. Yeah, there's a case to be made for that. The bottom line is I've never seen a disparity like that. I've never seen a game called in which four total fouls are called in the first half and 26 and two techs are called in the second half. That's just a completely different way of officiating a game in which you've already established you're going to let them play. And again, I think it's one thing if a game starts to get out of hand, gets chippy, you got a couple of near brawls. I never felt watching the game it was getting out of hand. Was it a little bit chippy here and there? Were there a couple of, you know, a strong elbows, a hook and hold? Yeah, but nothing that, you know, was, you know, on the verge of getting completely out of control. I enjoyed the game, really wanted Houston to win, really wanted Houston to cover. The game went off at 1. I gave it out at 1.5. By the time I personally played it, Denton, it was actually 1. Yeah, the game was an under game the whole way unless it had gone into overtime. Florida deserved it. I thought Florida executed better on offense down the stretch. I thought they defended just as hellaciously as Houston did at times during this game. And ultimately, over the final, you know, a minute and a half, it was their defense that stood up. I think Houston messed some things up down the stretch, no doubt. But ultimately, you ended up with a 2-point, you know, crazy, horrendous ending for Emmanuel Sharpe in particular. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. If you want to weigh in, would love to get your thoughts on last night's national championship game. Denton, what did you think?
I mean, the final play was tough, man. Like, that is the overarching thing about the game. I think you're right about the officiating. That seemed to be a trend in the NCAA tournament this year, that the officials would take games over late, whether it be too many reviews or, in this case, completely switching up how they were officiating. And your buddy is correct. Usually it's the opposite. You get ticky-tacky to set the tone in the first half, and then you allow them, knowing the gravity of the moment, to get a little bit more physical in the second half. So doing the opposite was really a gut punch. It made it tough to watch from a viewership standpoint. And like, you already understand that you're alienating a large part of the East Coast because you're starting the game so late. So the second
it's the earliest they've ever started it. It used to start at 9:20. It started 30 minutes earlier.
Yeah, but it's still basically tipped at 9 o'clock. So you're starting the second half at what? Like 10:30? So you're like, a lot of the people that are on the East Coast are going to bed because they got to wake up, and then you make this game, you prolong it longer than it needed to be because you decided to make yourself as the officials the star of the show. So that was brutal. That was tough to watch. Somebody, they got to get better at that. Like, we can't leave multiple games in the NCAA tournament that are supposed to be good games talking about the officiating. With that said, Houston still had an opportunity at the end, and I just, in watching this play, Kevin, over and over again, you know, watching it last night and then coming in this morning, seeing different angles of it, not that I really needed to, but just because I was curious, it just felt like in Sharp's head, he was shooting a three. no matter what happened, he was shooting a three. He wanted that shot, and then he just kind of had a brain fart, I guess. Maybe that's the best way of describing what it was, but it's the worst possible time to have something like that take place. Because you're 100%, if he makes a basketball move, at the very least, he gets a good long two. He could still get himself a good three-point shot. But he committed to that three, didn't like it as soon as he got up in the air, and then it felt like no one for Houston knew what to do once the ball hit the ground, once the ball hit the court. Everyone just kind of stood and paused, and Ian Eagle's like, he can't touch it. And then all of a sudden, everybody converges. But they let like 3 seconds go off the clock, just watching the ball kind of dribble at Sharp's feet.
Yeah, I mean, he's hoping a teammate will come over and pick it up.
He's like, please, somebody bail me out. And everyone is just like, what is happening
now? Go ahead, finish up, because I want to add to that. But what else?
Well, I mean, so that was it. Like, I feel bummed for Kelvin Sampson. As we were coming out of that break, I was watching the play again, and he's just kind of standing there. He's not really, I don't want to say he's not really coaching, but he's not animated. He's not screaming. He's not giving instruction. They had some stuff they wanted to run. They looked like they had that stuff in motion, and then he's just kind of standing there watching the game fall apart. And you don't even get a reaction when Sharp goes up and drops the ball. I feel terribly for him. You see a man's spirit crumbling inside because he knows yet again the rug was pulled out from under him.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that I would add to that final sequence. Number one, honestly, was as organized a possession as they had over the final few possessions. I mean, they ran that stagger screen for Cryer, and you know they got out on Cryer. Cryer makes, I think, the right play, because then they down screen for Sharp, and he's coming up there. And look, you could say maybe they go quicker, maybe they get the ball up on the rim. They're the best offensive rebounding team. They've already got 15 offensive rebounds. We're going inside to Roberts. We're crashing the glass, and you could make a case for handling the final 19 seconds. It was 19 seconds, right? I think 19-something.
Yeah, 19.7.
Yeah. So you could make the case for, we're not taking the last shot here, or we're not taking a super late shot here. We trust in our ability to go get it off the glass. We trust in our ability, if we score, to defend on the other end, even if we leave Florida with more time. So that's number one. You could make the case for that. Number two is, the action they ran was as organized a set as they had had down the stretch. Point three is, you could say they wanted Cryer, because they did, off that stagger, to take the last shot. He made the right play, because here comes Sharp off that down screen, and Clayton is late. Now, he does a phenomenal job closing out, but he's late getting started on the closeout. You could say, look, Cryer's been your best player for a couple of years, I mean, other than Shed, and back it back out, space the floor, and let him take the last shot. Let him go one-on-one. But, you know, he had a couple of shots blocked in that game. A couple of jump shots that were blocked that were really well defended. I think Martin had one. I think Martin had maybe – somebody had a blocked shot on him out on the perimeter. So I think he makes the right play, and then it's really simple. It's like Sharp catches the ball. Now, he's pretty far behind the arc, but you got somebody running full speed, one pump fake, and it's one dribble, gather, and you got a wide open three, or you could drive it because there were still 4-something seconds left. He just thought he was wide open, and by the way, he had a quick trigger all night long. All right. In the first half, if you go back, and by the way, had it against Duke as well, but knocked a bunch of them down. But he has a super quick trigger. Like, he is open all the time. Just ask him. And he's ready to fire. But in that case, that is anybody that's ever played at any level that has a defense running at you, pump, buy you, and then gather yourself, shoot, or drive. He had time to drive. Maybe he thought the clock was down to lower than 5 seconds or lower than 4.5 seconds. I don't know. But it was just a bad play by him. It was just a non-feel basketball play. You had somebody that literally started near the baseline to close out. You know, he was in the, you know, he was just barely in front of the rim, and he's got a long way to come to close out. He did a great job, Clayton Jr. did, but he's running too fast, and he's off his feet. The pump fake, if he doesn't leave his feet himself, Clayton's flying by him. Flying by him. I mean, part of it is he could have leaned into Clayton and shot it.
Yeah, the whistle was heavy all second half. Get a foul. Get yourself to the free throw line.
Yeah. So,
well,
anyway.
Isn't it? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty positive in the late stages of the Final Four game, Houston did something similar to that to Cooper Flagg. It might not have been Cooper Flagg, but I'm pretty sure they got a Duke guy with something very similar to where he thought he had a shot, they had a great closeout, and then he ends up putting the ball on the ground, touching it, and then he gets called for a travel. I don't know if it was Flagg. It might have been Proctor, but I feel like they got someone late in the second half.
Well,
with that
Proctor
in the Final
turned
Four.
The ball over off his leg, but there was some defensive pressure down this stretch. It was the perfect setup too if you had Houston in the under, because he was going to shoot a three and a walk-off 66-65 win. Boom. That would have been perfect. Your description of Kelvin Sampson, I've seen a lot of people say, you know, what was Sampson doing? Like, he's got to coach him. No, you called the play. The play actually worked. You know, you ended up getting a guy who had somebody trying to close out at full speed, and if he makes a good basketball play, he's got what you called, which is we're going for the win. You know, whether it was Cryer off the staggered screen or reversing the ball like he did to Sharp, you went for the win and you had it. The kid just made a boneheaded play. I don't know what you do with the there's nothing you can do. You don't have any timeouts left. You don't have possession of the ball once he drops it. And, yeah, it was just an unfortunate ending to what was a really intense game that, again, I think got impacted far too much by officiating. Far too much. 301-230-0980 if you want to weigh in. We'll start with Big Tony. What's up? No Big Tony. All right, we'll take a break. If you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Phone lines are open. National championship thoughts. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980. So I saw this, Denton, yesterday. Maybe some of you saw it as well. The women's national championship game, which was a blowout. Connecticut routing South Carolina on Sunday afternoon, drew 8.5 million viewers. That was 10.4 million fewer than last year's women's final between Iowa and South Carolina. Caitlin Clark, you may have heard of her. She played in that final last year. There's been so many narratives about Caitlin Clark and was it her and, you know, or was it the combination of her and Angel Reese and their rivalry, et cetera, et cetera. Remember the year before when they played in the final, there were 9.9 million viewers in 2023. So they doubled that last year, or nearly doubled that last year. But there's never been an audience like the one last year with Caitlin Clark in the final. Paige Beckers is a draw. 8.5 million is the number of viewers. And that's, you know, you go back to 2021 and 2022 when the women's national championship game just drew 4.1 million viewers and 4.85 million viewers before the Caitlin Clark phenomena. And as she, you know, pulled everything else in the sport along for the ride, including people like Angel Reese, who she was a participant, no doubt. That rivalry certainly juiced things up. But Paige Beckers was a big draw in the sport here recently. 10.4 million fewer viewers for the championship game. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the game last year wasn't the UConn, the South Carolina Iowa game wasn't that closely contested either, right? I'm pretty sure South Carolina did a number on Iowa for the most part. Maybe not to the...
It was, there were moments where it felt like Iowa had opportunities, but it was,
What was the final score?
I'm pulling the final.
Here it is, 87-75.
Yeah, so
South Carolina won by 12.
Points in time where Iowa behind Caitlin Clark were made it interesting, but not all that interesting.
Yeah. So I don't really understand why the debate about the sport becoming all of a sudden meteorically more popular than it ever was. Why there's any sort of pushback to the idea that one person has moved the needle much more so than anybody else has. But it's so obvious, like, you really got to be deep into some stuff not to understand that Caitlin Clark is Tiger Woods. Like, that's what she did to that sport. That's why the whole Summer Olympic thing is one of the dumbest things ever. The idea that, well, she's just on the fringe of the team and it wouldn't be fair. Are you out of your mind? Do you know how many jerseys, Olympic jerseys, would have been sold? I don't know where the revenue from that stuff goes to, but it's better to generate it than not generate it. I mean, we'll never, I'm not going to say never, but this was a once and a lifetime needle mover. I mean, 10.4 million more a year later than a year later. And, you know, Paige Beckers is a star in the sport, right? She's a pretty damn big star in the sport.
She was supposed to be Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark was Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, but she's no Caitlin Clark.
Right, she's not. She doesn't do the, she doesn't pull it from 40, and she also doesn't take a team in Iowa that is not all that spectacular and take them to the finals. She takes UConn, who is loaded with talent.
Yeah, but is a more marquee brand going in. It just, that conversation last, you know, spring into the summer, I don't get it. I mean, I know that there's a lot of racial, you know, sensitivities in this conversation. There is a lot of gender parts of the conversation, but it's just so obvious. Sometimes it's like, it doesn't have anything to do with anything. Okay? She move the needle for some reason. You never can explain it. Her greatness, obviously. The shooting, no doubt. But Paige Beckers is a great player, too. And I believe is the same skin color. 10.4 million less viewers a year later. It was Caitlin Clark. It's not that hard. It's just not that hard. She's the one that brought a whole new audience last year and the year before to women's college basketball. It's okay to say it. And by the way, to the WNBA. It's all right. I mean, when I saw that number yesterday, I was thinking, that can't be right. It can't be 10.4 million more last year than this year. I mean, how many people are going to watch? How many people do you think watched the men's final last night? The men's final usually does like a 14 or a 15 rating, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm curious when we get that number.
We'll get it today at some point.
Because I
mean, remember last year that beat the men's final. I think the final four women's games and the championship game beat the men's last year.
Yeah, the men's UConn Purdue, which was the matchup that I feel like most people wanted. Because you wanted to see Purdue and those two teams who were the best team throughout the course of the entire season, did a 14.8.
Yeah, 14.8.
And by the way, the women's game was at like 3 p.m. on a Sunday.
Sunday, not even prime time.
Not a great slot, all things considered.
Exactly. So it outdrew last year's men's final. And the men's final the year before with UConn and San Diego State did 14.69. The Kansas UNC final did 17 million in 2022. So
Caitlin Clark being a bigger draw than UNC in Kansas, I think, is the real conversation. To echo your points about how big, like, those are two of the biggest brands in the sport, and Caitlin Clark, this Midwestern girl from Iowa, outdrew those two.
Yeah.
Because UNC was on that hell of a run. They'd retired Coach K. They beat him at home in his final game. Then they retired him. Like, they were on this crazy run, and that game only drawing 17 with those marquee brands. Like, I can't imagine that Houston, Florida, I can't imagine it did more than 14.8 that last year did.
Listen to the popularity of this sport, college basketball, in just the last 15 years. You go back to the 2010 final, which, by the way, was Duke-Butler. Okay? Butler was in it, but Duke was in it. So it was David Goliath, but you had Duke as Goliath. 24 million people watched that championship game. All right, it did a 14.2 rating. 24 million people watched that championship game. And here we are 15 years later, and they'll be lucky to get 14 or 15 million to have watched last night. Now, if Duke had been in the final last night, it would have been a bigger draw. Obviously, CBS would have preferred Duke to have won the game Saturday night. But the sport just isn't the same. Well, 2015, Duke-Wisconsin is the highest rated final. Let's see if it's even in this century. I bet it is. Yeah, that's the highest rated final in this century, the 2015 game. That was a phenomenal championship game. But the sport just isn't the same anymore. It just isn't in terms of its popularity. You know, the tournament is popular. And by the way, those numbers are bigger numbers or comparable numbers to what the NBA Finals draw. I'm pretty sure, Denton. I think the NBA Finals do, you know, 14, 15, 16 million viewers, something like that. Obviously, game sevens, you know, are the equivalent to a one-game championship game, so it's not exactly apples to apples. But I saw the difference between this year's women's final and last year's, and it's like, my God, what else does anybody need? Anybody hanging on this? Nah, it just wasn't her. You know, she was part of it, but it was the teams, the great LSU teams with Kim Mularkey and Dawn Staley, South Carolina teams, and Angel Reese and this player and that player. No. Paige Beckers was as big a star as the sports had. UConn is the biggest brand in the sport. They were in the championship game, same time, same starting time, Sunday afternoon, and it did 10.4 million less viewers. People were drawn to Caitlin Clark. She drew in the casual sports fan. Every sport wants to draw in the casual sports fan. You know, that's, she did it, and she did it in the WNBA as well. All right, we'll do some Denton news when we come back.